Hello, welcome to the show called The Environment. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm going to be reading an article today from the Sierra Magazine, the Spring 2024 edition. The article is entitled, A Tale of Two Coal States. The subtitle is, What Happens to Coal-Dependent Communities When the Coal Goes Away? A lot depends on whether their state government is reality-based. This was an article written by Elizabeth Kwok Heffernan. As the sun rose on July 23, 2021, a sudden, sharp crack echoed across the high desert on the outskirts of Nucla, Colorado. Flickers of light snaked up the support beams holding what was left of the Nucla Station Power Plant's Unit 4. Black clouds poured from the building's base. Within 5 seconds, it collapsed in a rolling roar of sound and smoke. And then the 215-foot steel stack next to it toppled into the ruins. Tri-State Generation and Transmission had finished the demolition of the first of its 4 wholly owned coal-fired power plants. You might say that the era of coal in the west end of Montrose County ended with a bang. For decades, Nucla Station and the source of its coal, nearby New Horizon Mine, had formed the backbone of the West End's economy. They provided well-paying union jobs in a remote region where other options were slim and pumped property taxes into the little towns of Nucla, Nacharita, Norwood, and Paradox. Well, when the plant and the mine shut down in 2019, their closures triggered an economic tumult that the communities are still reckoning with today. About 500 miles north, the Crow tribe of South Central Montana grapples with a similar situation. There, too, coal has propped up the economy. But the tribe's coal mine has been in steep decline for the past 9 years. Another nearby mine closed in 2021, and Montana's largest power plant, coal-burning Coalstrip, retired 2 of its 4 units in 2020. On a reservation already struggling with poverty and unemployment due to the cumulative effects of colonization, coal's downward spiral threatens even further suffering. But there's a key difference in the way Colorado and Montana are handling their transitions away from coal. Colorado is putting millions of dollars and a first-of-its-kind state administrative office toward helping coal communities shift to new, sustainable, diversified futures. But Montana, on the other hand, is clinging to coal so tightly that any talk of transition is seen as betrayal, leaving its coal regions on their own. As methane gas and renewable energy sources have become much cheaper and environmental regulations have restricted carbon emissions, coal production nationwide is half what it was back in 2008. Its crash has evaporated tens of thousands of coal jobs from West Virginia to Alaska. Now, while that's undoubtedly good news for the climate, every shuttered mine and power plant means more employees who need to find another way to feed their families. It means more towns that lose the funds they relied on for schools, libraries, and fire departments. And as the global energy transition takes hold, ensuring a just transition grows in importance. The International Labor Organization defines the concept as, quote, greening the economy in a way that is as fair and inclusive as possible to everyone concerned, creating decent work opportunities and leaving no one behind, unquote. Now that can mean job retraining, thoughtful community development, and ideally, money to help those affected get back on their feet. The people of coal country, former miners and power plant workers, construction workers, mom-and-pop business owners, they face profound transformations in their daily lives. How they come out may depend on what state they live in. One late summer day in 2016, Roger Carver squeezed into the training room at Nucla Station with all the other employees of the power plant and the New Horizon mine. A day or two before, Tri-State had announced a company meeting. Carver knew what that meant. Carver has lived his whole life in Nucla, and his family history in the West End and in mining, it stretches clear back to the early 1900s. His grandfather worked a string of pack mules that hauled uranium ore from the area's mines to the freight train in nearby Placerville. His stepfather worked in the local Peabody strip mine in the 70s. Carver himself had been mining coal for 24 years, and at that time in 2016, he was the president of his United Mine Workers local. Well, at the meeting, Tri-State's top brass announced that they would be closing both the mine and the power plant by 2022. Carver said, "We had seen things coming for quite a while, but a lot of guys didn't. They thought Trump was going to save them." Carver was 57 at the time, fighting lung problems and close to retirement, so the news did not drastically change his plans. But by the following June, Tri-State had sped up the timeline, and the mine permanently ceased coal production. Nucla Station also ceased operation in 2019, 3 years ahead of schedule. Carver says, "A lot of people got a real shocker." But that wasn't the West End's first mining boom and bust. The region had been a hub for mining and milling uranium and vanadium from the 1940s to 1984, famously supplying the Manhattan Project. In 1986, the whole operation was declared a Superfund site when the EPA completely demolished and buried the town of Uravan, that's 18 miles northwest of Nucla, over radiation concerns. That left coal mining and the power plant as the West End's economic drivers. That foundation began to crumble in 2012 when a lawsuit from the environmental group Wild Earth Guardians over regional haze rules successfully compelled Tri-State to retire Nucla Station, New Horizon Mine, and another coal-fired generating unit in northern Colorado. As coal power grew more and more expensive, and the utility embraced a low-carbon plan in keeping with Colorado's ambitious emission reduction goals, Tri-State moved up its deadline. Amy Tooker, a nuclear entrepreneur who serves as president of the West End Economic Development Corporation, said, "We could have used those 2 years. We lost a lot of young families. Many of the laid-off workers took jobs at Tri-State's coal plant in Craig, Colorado, 250 miles away, only to face the same situation in 2020 when the utility announced that it would close that facility as well within the decade. Others took early retirement, or they stayed put and found new jobs with a big pay cut. The closures meant a 67% loss for the West End's property taxes, which funded the area's schools, fire department, and cemetery district. Tooker says that was a pretty big blow. Morale in the community plummeted. Brock Benson, who was born in Nucla to parents who had worked for the Peabody mine, said, "As we transition away from fossil fuels, the side effects are crushing to communities like this. Mining built these communities, but the economic fallout of all of it going away, that has devastated them." Bill Yellowtail lives in what he calls the Absaluk Heartland on the shoulders of the Bighorn Mountains, just this side of the Wyoming border. He said, crows have always treasured that area because it is so verdant. When it's 100 degrees down here in the lower valley, up there it'll be 75. We have wild fruit and wild game and wonderful clear water. Yellowtail's great-grandfather claimed the land when the federal government divided up tribal lands for individual ownership. Yellowtail says, that landscape has a great depth of meaning for me. I have this sense that yellowtails have been there a very long time. To others, the Absaluk heartland is the Powder River Basin, a grassy, big sky landscape stretching across southeastern Montana and northeastern Wyoming that's incredibly rich in coal deposits. More than 40% of the country's coal is pulled from the earth right there. The Crow tribe's economy has been knotted to mining for decades, thanks to its 9 billion tons of coal reserves. Yellowtail said, we are addicted to coal here. Yellowtail served as a regional administrator at the EPA during the Clinton administration. He went on and said, we're so addicted, it's even to the extent that we don't object to tearing vast holes in Mother Earth. Our old ethic from my great-grandfather's time would have objected strenuously. Now, we don't think twice about it. Our dependency runs deep. Though both the Crow Nation and the Colorado coal communities have relied economically on the same fossil fuel for decades, their situations are not parallel, for reasons both historical and structural. After smallpox epidemics killed 80% of the Absaluk population by the middle of the 19th century, the U.S. government chipped away at the tribe's homeland until just a sliver remained. In 1851, the U.S. formally recognized 38 million acres across what is now Montana and Wyoming as Crow territory. But today, only 2.3 million acres remains. By the 1880s, the nomadic seasonal hunters were pushed into an agricultural life on their reservation. The plains bison were being slaughtered, and white settlers were encroaching on what little was left of their land. Forced assimilation through government policy, including abusive boarding schools where children were stripped of their culture, left a legacy of trauma within a nation that today still very much values and practices its language and traditions. The Crow tribe's coal reserves are especially key because the Crow government, like that of most other Native nations, does not collect property or income taxes. It does, however, collect severance taxes and royalties from Westmoreland Resources, which has been leasing Absaluka Mine and extracting the tribe's coal since back in 1974. The mine lies just outside the reservation's northern boundary on a piece of land the federal government took in 1904. Legislation in the 1950s affirmed the tribe's mineral rights there. Now, Spring Creek Mine, which is 130 miles south, also provides high-paying jobs to tribal members. But it's Absaluka that feeds the tribe's coffers the most, and coal makes up at least 75% of the tribal government's budget. Leslie Kabuti, a Crow tribal member and secretary of the board of the three-year-old nonprofit Wyola Development Fund, which is based in the tiny town of Wyola on the reservation's southern border. Incidentally, Yellowtail is her cousin, and he serves as chair of its board. Leslie said, other counties and cities rely upon a tax base to generate the revenues that support the development of their community or the delivery of public services. Tribal economies don't have the benefit of that. As a result, our economies don't have a steady flow of recurring revenue. What we have is the sale of non-renewable resources. The Crow's coal resources have been buffeted by the same energy transition that is taking place in Colorado. Decker Mine, just east of the reservation boundary line, shuttered in 2021, taking more than 100 jobs with it. The owners of Spring Creek Mine filed for bankruptcy in 2019. After the new owners revived a proposed expansion, a federal judge struck it down in 2021, and Absaluka's mine output has been in freefall. In 2022, it produced 2.2 million tons, a third as much as back in 2014. And the tribe's income fell in step. From 2015 to 2019, tribal coal income decreased by as much as 80%. Tribal government, one of the top employers on the reservation, has had to lay off workers. Funds earmarked for support projects across the Crow Nation's six districts vanished, and per capita payments to tribal members declined significantly. Roberta Glenn, who worked in children's mental health and business education for the Crow government at that time, said, "When coal started phasing out, you could see the impact right away. You could see the need greatly increase with the funding shortage. Food was an issue. Crime went up. Unemployment rates on the reservation are extremely high." Incidentally, the U.S. Census Bureau reported a nearly 30% poverty rate on the Crow Reservation in 2022. Many have had to leave to find work elsewhere. Despite the plummeting coal production of recent years, there is not much of a plan B for the Crow Nation right now. Crow tribal executive leadership did not respond to interview requests. And Yellowtail says, "We cannot seem to grasp the inevitability of the decline of coal. In my estimation, it will go away. I think Crow tribal government will starve to death, and we will be left without." Any community dependent on coal, or any single industry, is a community at risk of collapse, as the remains of former American boomtowns rooted in logging or gold mining or steel manufacturing can attest. Experts say that the best way to transition out of coal dependency is to diversify the economy, something made far easier with the assistance of state and federal governments. Grace Blanchard, who manages programs for resilient economies and communities for the National Association of Counties, said, "A lot of our leaders will say they had all their eggs in one basket. We're looking to empower communities to have their eggs in multiple baskets." How to transform a place dominated by a single employer into a thriving mix of small businesses, renewable energy projects, and other ventures that won't take the whole town down with them if they fail? Well, cash helps. To hire transition consultants and grant writers, to fix aging infrastructure, to build new residential and commercial spaces, to develop outdoor recreation and tourism amenities. And often that means piecing together funding from a slew of sources, like federal grants or state programs or tax incentives or philanthropic donations and community nonprofits. And such planning requires strong partners in government, according to Taryn Zamuda, who is chief economist for the National Association of Counties. Taryn said, "Intergovernmental coordination is really key to any successful implementation of programs. County to state and county to federal, those are really critical partnerships. We want all our stakeholders at the table, having conversations and buying in. But that requires having willing, higher-level officials to work with, like those in Colorado." Tanya Naramore also learned that she was out of a coal job at the nuclear station meeting in 2016. A lifelong resident of the West End, she had been working at New Horizon Mine for 19 years, driving 100-ton haul trucks. She had plenty of working years ahead of her and considered transferring to the Craig Coal Mine, Naramore says, "I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I figured coal was going to be non-existent before too long." So she applied to work for the Montrose County Road and Bridge Department, but was turned down because she didn't have a commercial driver's license. Fortunately, the first influx of just transition cash was reaching the West End from the job-promoting Markle Foundation. It paid for a workforce development program called Skillful West End at the end of 2018, hiring the local Carla Reams to help manage the transition. So Reams visited the power plant and the mine, offering to help employees with job retraining, resume writing, and job searches. And Naramore was one of the many who took her up on it. So, with Reams' guidance, Naramore went to truck driving school, earned her Class A license, and reapplied with the county. Naramore landed the job. She's had to get used to a significant pay cut, but she likes the new gig and the fact that it's only 4 miles from home. Tri-State also kicked in $500,000 for the community through the West End Pay It Forward Trust, which has funded nonprofit programs, including suicide prevention, as well as an ATV for the search and rescue team and new siding for a community building in Paradox. Much more money soon followed. During the 2019 session, the Colorado Legislature created the Office of Just Transition within the State Department of Land and Employment. That's the first of its kind in the country. Incidentally, the Sierra Club's Colorado chapter played a major role, along with unions in the Blue-Green Alliance, in passing the Just Transition Bill. Senator Faith Winter, a Democrat who represents Denver's northwest suburbs and was one of the bill's sponsors, said, "This was incredibly necessary because we know our economy is changing." She went on and said, "There are winners and losers, and we need to ensure that we are taking care of our workers and our communities that have relied on coal." Well, in 2022, the legislature voted to stock the OJT, the Office of Just Transition, with $15 million from the state's general fund. And that money went toward the creation of a worker assistance program and to direct grants for 8 Colorado coal communities. Now, the West End coal workers had already moved on by the time the OJT grants came around, but the community still has priority status. As Tooker puts it, "We've already transitioned, but we haven't recovered." The 2022 poverty rate, according to the U.S. Census, was 19.4% in Nacharita and 18.1% in Nucla. So a task force of West End leaders decided to focus on major infrastructure projects in order to pave the way for new residents and businesses. Michaela Gordon, the executive director of the West End Economic Development Corporation, said, "The septic in Nucla and Nacharita is pushing 100 years old. Anytime we try to tap into a pipe, it bursts. You can't grow if you can't flush your toilets." So the OJT awarded almost $1.75 million to Nucla, Nacharita, and Norwood for wastewater system upgrades. Even communities that have not yet lost their coal are spending on economic diversification projects, like developing a boat ramp on the local river and building a new business district. West Enders have their gripes about the Office of Just Transition, mostly the requirements for how each round of funding can be spent. "I'd like to see this money more nimbly used," said Montrose County Commissioner Sue Hansen. Sue went on and said, "The communities know what they need, but broadly speaking, people recognize their good fortune, and some aspect of Colorado's other coal communities will have an easier time of it when their power plants or mines finally shut down, as long as they plan ahead." Tooker said, "I don't think they'll have near the bumps and near the loss that we have had. They've got the resources now. What they want to get done, they should be able to get done." Gordon describes the West End's transition as being in the marathon phase. Community members have plenty of ideas for how to move forward. Many would like to see a revival of uranium mining. Others hope for a new hospital or a solar farm. Gordon says we would happily welcome a larger company to come in, but being able to support 3 or 4 smaller employers makes more sense for the community than one larger employer does. Well, there's still a lot of work to be done, and the West End plans to put its next rounds of transition dollars toward building more housing to accommodate growth, maintaining an apprenticeship program, and further developing its tourism potential. West End's future is already coming into view. An organic grocery store started up in the area in 2019. The region's red rock canyons and high desert landscapes and abundant public land support a burgeoning network of mountain biking and ATV trails that attract more and more tourists, and businesses to support them are beginning to arrive. Brock Benson, whose parents worked at the Peabody Mine, moved back in 2021 and opened a bike shop. Paradox Cycle in Nacharita in 2022. Even though a combination bike shop and pizza parlor opened across the street from him in 2023. But Benson still says business at Paradox Cycle is booming. Well, we're almost out of time, so I'm going to have to say goodbye. So next time we get together, we'll finish up this article. I've been reading A Tale of Two Coal States, written by Elizabeth Kwok Heffernan. And that article was found in the Sierra Magazine, the Spring 2024 edition. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the show called The Environment. Have a great week. I hope you keep on listening. Bye-bye.